The new program year for our youth ministry has begun. And every year when youth and their adult leaders gather for the first time, they discuss, haggle, and hopefully agree on a new set of guidelines, rules, and expectations for how to live together for the next 10 months. And every time this happens, I am reminded of a young man named Nathan. Now, stop me if I've already told this story. Or, more to the point, prepare yourself to enjoy it again. Because Nathan understood this particular gospel clearly. Several years ago at a previous parish, it was this time of year, and in my role as youth leader, I was leading a group of middle school youth through this yearly covenant process. So we brainstormed all the guidelines for the year. Trust, confidentiality, showing up on time, participating in all activities, on and on until everyone had an opportunity to speak. Then everyone in the group, adults and youth alike, began to sign this now sacred document. This was important because later in the year, if, say, maybe on a snow trip, you found it impossible not to insult your sister, we as a group could point to this common document. And so there we were, in the dim light of some youth room, slowly taking our turns signing our covenant. Except for one very intelligent and somewhat socially awkward sixth grader, Nathan. Nathan hadn't said much in the process of creating our covenant. He was mostly taking it in until he was the last person to approach this piece of butcher paper. Now, as he came up, I noticed he had a concerned look on his face. So I asked him, "Nathan, my man, is something bothering you?" He paused. "Well, if I sign this covenant, does it mean that I actually have to do everything that it says on here?" Yeah. And with that, Nathan had cut to the heart of the matter, asking the question that might have been or should have been on everyone's mind. If I sign this, if I follow this way, is it going to cost me something? I tell you, friends, there's nothing like preaching the gospel if you're looking for comfort. Last week, Jesus was admonishing his listeners about where to sit at the table and who to invite to their feasts. This week, we hear Jesus take a hard stance on family values, tell a story about building a failed tower, another story about fighting a losing battle, and then tells people to be ready to give away all their possessions. Such good news. As usual, in order to make sense of what we've heard from the Gospel of Luke, I think that it's critical to spend some time looking at the passages that precede it. After last week's passage about assumed status and privilege, and before our gospel for this morning, lies the reason why I believe Jesus gives us such harsh words. Because in the space between these two readings, Jesus tells a telling story, another one of his parables. And it goes a little something like this. Someone gave a great dinner and was inviting many people. When it came time for the feast, the slaves went around to collect the guests. As the slave made his rounds, the invited guests all made excuses as to why they couldn't attend. Here were the pearls they offered. "I just bought a piece of land. I really should go and see it." Or, "I just bought 5 yoke of oxen. I'm off to try them out to see what they can do." My favorite, though, "Whoa, you should have caught me earlier. I just got married. What's a guy to do?" The host, angered by his guest's excuses, had his servant go out into town to invite the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. And you know what? Those guests, the poor and blind, the crippled and the lame, they were the ones who showed up. And so this is the setting, the backdrop, if you will, for our gospel today. In the telling of this parable, Jesus is laying out his frustrations with those who talk the talk, but are unwilling to walk the walk. To these folks, Jesus has clear words. In this passage, he uses the same phrase in Greek three times, the phrase, "not able to be my disciple." The emphasis, "not able to be my disciple," I believe has little to do with ability and everything to do with willingness. They can come to the feast, they just aren't willing. People can be his disciple, they just aren't always willing. Those invited to the banquet say, "Oh, not today. New property, just got married, trying out oxen, washing my hair." And what Jesus is saying is, "Come on, people. It's going to take a little more dedication than this. With that kind of commitment, do you think you'll be able to keep your feet on the path to where I'm heading?" For it's no mistake that he mentions the cross that he is about to bear. And this, for us as his followers 20 centuries later, is critical. His disciples, those who he's talking to in this part of the gospel, very likely have no idea what he's talking about. They have little clue that their master, their teacher, their leader is going to be executed by the state on a cross reserved for criminals. These words, friends, are meant for us. For we know what it means to bear the cross, what it means to follow Christ in these footsteps to the grave and beyond. This, friends, is what Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the 20th century Christian martyr, meant when he wrote the decisive book, Costly Discipleship. There is a cost to the road we tread, a truth that is not often spoken in Christianity nowadays. For this reason, our gospel this morning asks us to look closely at what we cling to most tightly, whether it is relationships, possessions, even life itself. Christ is reminding us that in this life, the cost of sacrifice is real, and that we must consider it and prepare for it even as we follow him. Yesterday was the feast day of one of the recent saints of the church, an Episcopal bishop named Paul Jones. How many have ever heard the name Paul Jones before? All right, a few. Bishop Jones was the missionary bishop of Utah in the early 20th century, and is one of the few members of the House of Bishops, if not the only member of the House of Bishops, to be forced to resign over matters that had nothing to do with canon law. The year was 1916 and on into early 1917, and the United States was rapidly being called into what was then known as the war to end all wars. If that only were the case. The official stance of the Episcopal Church, as made known by presiding Bishop Tuttle, was that it was to be each Christian's duty to support the war. Bishop Jones and others felt differently. He strongly and publicly opposed the violence that was inevitable during war and was highly skeptical that any modern war involving weapons of indiscriminate destruction could be a just war. Because of his reading of the gospel and his understanding of the discipleship of Christ, he openly opposed the notion that engaging in that war was a necessary act of Christian duty. The public outcry, especially in the Mormon community in Utah, was deafening. Though he based his belief on the gospel and referred to the early church's pacifist practice, he was excoriated in the press and in many places throughout the Episcopal Church. Talk about losing family, hating life itself. The pain and the pressure brought to bear upon Bishop Jones was nearly unbearable. The attacks upon his faith, his patriotism, and his character were relentless. Yet before taking his stand, Bishop Jones had counted the cost. and therefore continued to keep his vows as bishop of the diocese. He believed that he could, as a faithful Christian, be opposed to a war that he saw as unjust and remain the shepherd and overseer of the flock in Utah. It was not to be, however, for even though they acknowledged there were no issues of canon law whatsoever, the House of Bishops, bowing to the excited condition of public opinion, forced Bishop Jones to resign his episcopacy. It is of painful irony that nearly 100 years later, the same calls of treason and public outcry were leveled at our own bishop as he took his own stand against a war. In a recent struggle with these texts, a wise friend emailed me parts of a book by Frederick Buechner. Of his many works, Buechner has written a slim volume called Telling the Truth, The Gospel as Tragedy, Comedy, and Fairy Tale. And in it, he talks about how difficult this good news from the gospel can be. He writes, "The word is tragedy before it is comedy, because it strips us bare in order to ultimately clothe us." These words ring out clearly for me today because, like many of us, I suspect I need to hear them. It is important, it is essential that we be reminded of the cost of discipleship as well as its reward. For even as Bishop Jones was stripped of his see as the missionary bishop of Utah, he was clothed with a clarity and strength of purpose. Our word this day reminds us that we may need to be detached even from our understanding of family in order to remember that we are primarily called to be brothers and sisters in Christ, even as we are called to be wives and husbands, fathers and mothers, daughters and sons. Many times I know that I need to have this gospel break me open that I may rebuild, be stripped bare to be clothed again. As in any process of reformation, these difficult words are essential, even though, especially as they reveal to me my own unwillingness and fear of what I may become. This is what it is to count the cost. Frederick Buechner knows, as Dietrich Bonhoeffer knew, as Bishop Paul Jones knew, even in his own way, that sixth grader Nathan knew, that discipleship is not going to be easy. If we are to truly face the whirlwind, Jesus says, we must know the cost. In this life, to stand up and bear this cross means risk and possible loss. Truth be told, I must admit this text does not sit easily with me, for I've just as many excuses as to why I don't stand up for what I know to be wrong, and just as importantly, for what I know to be right. This passage, though, continues to work its way into my thoughts and my dreams, demanding of me, demanding of us, an answer. Are we willing to stand and listen? Because make no mistake, friends, all of us have moments in our lives in which we can stand up for what we believe and pick up that which makes us tremble. This week and the months ahead, as they unfold, I ask, what is before you? What keeps you from standing up? Is it fear of being known as a disciple? Fear of loss of family, of friends? It's from this restless state that we are challenged with the words of Frederick Buechner once again when he writes, "The word comes out of the silence of the darkness, but the willingness to stand there long enough to hear anything is a costly venture." The willingness to stand there long enough to hear anything is a costly venture. Stand, friends, stand and listen. Be ready to count the cost, for it is in the cost that we will find the reward.